Hi, everybody. It's Dr. Eric Korm, the founder of AIM7. Welcome back to The Blueprint, where we distill cutting-edge science, leadership, and life skills into simple tactics optimized for your busy lifestyle and goals. Are blood tests useful for tracking health, or do they create unnecessary anxiety? Today, we have Dr. Leland Stillman, a board-certified physician with over 13 years of clinical experience on the show to discuss this. He'll reveal when testing makes sense, which labs truly matter, common mistakes made when interpreting hormones, and sustainable ways to use these labs to increase your vitality over time. We're also going to talk about iron and why you need to be donating blood. This is a fascinating episode with somebody that I think is on the cutting edge of holistic health and medicine. But before we get started, take a moment to sign up for my free newsletter, Adaptation. Every Friday, I send you actionable tips on how you can become an adaptation machine so stress doesn't debilitate you, but it becomes a force for growth in your life. Check it out now. The link is in the show notes. All right, let's get to my conversation with Dr. Stillman. So let's lean in and learn from the best. Are blood tests and lab testing useful? If so, how do you use them and what should people be testing for? And like, what's a waste of time?
The biggest waste of time is to get labs when you haven't already dialed in your lifestyle and your diet and even your environment. So people come to me and they'll have these horrible labs. I'm a little bit of two minds about this, right? Because on the one hand, labs, people have this almost inappropriate faith in labs. And the labs will kind of like rattle around in their brain and kind of haunt them in a way that will help them engage in behavior change. Like if I sit down with somebody, and this is my favorite lab test, so I'll lead off with this. It's called the high sensitivity CRP. The high sensitivity CRP is a highly sensitive marker for your risk of heart attack, right? Still the number one killer of adults, but just wait, cancer will overtake it in a hot minute. So it's a sobering test for somebody to get back. Hey, you're in the high risk category. You've got three kids and a wife. You're the sole breadwinner of your household. You better straighten up and fly right, or your wife and your kids are going to be living off your life insurance policy and you're not going to be there for them. So people are ready to kind of, okay, wait a minute, I better fix my diet, my lifestyle. So it's great for motivating them. But a lot of them, they come in and they say, okay, I'm overweight and I'm not eating right. And I drink three or four drinks a night and I'm really not engaging with an exercise regimen. Well, that person needs to fix all those things anyway. So I'm happy to get the labs up front to convince them that yes, they do need to get on the bandwagon. But I also know that a lot of the abnormalities are going to resolve as we get them to engage in behavior change. And so I'll kind of see where somebody's at and then go from there. And sometimes it's a matter of, like, I've had people come to me who were in a very busy season at their work. And they say, look, I'm trying to close a multi-million dollar deal. I do not have the option of taking time for me. And I say, look, I get it, but you better make sure this is a season and not a perpetual state of affairs. And when you're ready to engage with me, I'm ready to engage with you and get you the results you're looking for. So that's where labs can become very valuable. And then I want them to track progress towards goals. Where a lot of people go wrong with labs is there's a lot of variability to them. So for example, I tested my lab panels and I did a video on this. If people want to go watch my video on my labs, go check it out. It's on my YouTube channel. And one of the things that struck me was my TSH, my thyroid stimulating hormone, bounced around from something like 1.5 to 4.5. So the highest it was, a doctor would have checked the full thyroid panel and put me on thyroid meds potentially. And of course, I didn't do that. I did check my thyroid panel and my levels were normal. So I didn't chase that rabbit hole. But people will get this idea of, oh my gosh, my cortisol was low. I must have low cortisol all the time. Well, cortisol is very dynamic. You give me a stressed out, all-nighter pulling graduate student, and I'll show you a trashed cortisol level 5 days a week. Give them 2 months of vacation in the summer, and it'll be normal. So it's very dynamic, and it doesn't mean you need to take cortisol supplement, which is a medication, to be fair. People need to understand they're a snapshot in time, they're dynamic. You need to have a good, healthy diet and lifestyle. And then once you've got that foundation, it makes sense to start to trend the labs. Because through trending the labs, we get an enormous amount of information about where you're at. And so I had a gentleman recently, he came to us a year ago, and we did a recent follow-up with him. And it turns out that he's taken his high sensitivity CRP from the I think it was either the high risk or the medium risk down to the low risk. So we cut his risk for heart attack in half in approximately a year, right? And that's one of the best things you could do for your health, right? And so that's the value of that test. That's the value of trending them over time. And the other tests I like to run at a minimum, hemoglobin A1C for looking at insulin sensitivity and average glucose level in the blood. I like to look at vitamin D. The CBC and the CMP are important, but very rarely are they deranged until illnesses are extremely advanced. And so there's actually not as much diagnostic value in them. And then I like to look at a DHEA level. DHEA sulfate's what I run, and it's a good marker for the physiologic reserve of the organism. So patient, maybe I'll say, as you get older, your DHEA levels drop. And as your DHEA levels drop, you become insulin resistant, and you tend to have more and more medical problems arise. And so it's a good surrogate for overall health and vitality. Now, there's some caveats to that. Like there's some disease states where you get a very elevated DHEA, such as PCOS, and that's not a good thing. But knowing where the DHEA level is a great marker for overall stress and health. Vitamin D, I like to see around 50 or above. Mm-hmm. And DHEA, I like to see in the top quintile or quartile. A1C, I like to see at least below 5.5. But that actually depends on goals, because if you're taking somebody and you're trying to get them to bulk up and gain muscle mass, as a lot of men want to do and a lot of women need to do, you actually need carbs. It's kind of challenging to get down to a hemoglobin A1C below 5. You have to really kind of fast and potentially carb restrict. And so not a lot of people actually get there. Most people are living in the low 5s who are healthy, really healthy, or the mid 5s. So that has to be dovetailed to the results, because you just can't gain muscle mass without carbs. It's not possible. I mean, it's short of like abusing anabolic steroids or something like that.
Oh, there's always a way.
There's always a way.
I'm just kidding.
So,
what about hormones? Like testosterone and all that? I mean, that's what people,
great now, question.
People my age, I'm in my 40s. Uh-huh. That's what they're indexing on. Like,
oh, yeah, I basically run a hormone panel on everyone in the practice who's got any kind of suspicion that there's something going on with them, which is, it's pretty low index of suspicion. And the one of the big misconceptions with them is that they're stable. So I did my testosterone levels 5 or 6 times last year, huge swings, 200 point swings, right? So you get a 400 and you freak out. For all you know, your average is 500 and your top is 600. You get a 600. This is basically my numbers.
You get a 600.
Yeah, you get maybe you're shooting the peak. So you think your average is 600, but really your average is 500 and you just hit the high day. So people know that inside the testosterone replacement world. And so they know that they're treating symptoms, not numbers, because people care about how they feel.
To me, I think it's a racket. Like these folks they're using these blood tests to create a fear. And then to your point, instead of like, let's go fix behaviors, let's go get people online with do it. It's like, let's give them an injection. That's the first place they want to start. Instead of let's go fix your relationship with light. Let's go fix your relationship with sleep, your relationship and your abilities to cope with stress and your ability to, you know, training so you can build biological adaptive capacity, all these different things. Quite honestly, it angers me a little bit. And so I have friends that come to me and some of the best athletes I worked with in the NFL, I did one study. I can't talk about where and who, but we wanted to look at in one of the teams I was with. I wanted to understand how travel across time zones impacted things like testosterone, cortisol, et cetera. And some of these guys that I was working with, these are good football players with lots of muscle. And you would look at them and be like, oh, their testosterone's good. Some of the best. Their testosterone was very normal. Others were very high and they weren't abusing anything. That was just them. And I talked to some other colleagues at different teams where they've had different hormone panels and they'd be like, yeah, man, like some of our biggest, most aggressive ballers, man, it was just like lots of muscle. They were in like the 400 range. And, you know, you would go to some doc in a box pain medication specialist or, you know, hormone, whatever company here. And they're like, oh, unless you're hovering around 800 or 900, you're not. Anyways, there's a whole lot of things that come with that. it's just testosterone, you're going to have testicular shrinkage. There's all sorts of stuff.
Anyways. Well, that's why I like to say, I say this to be provocative. I say that the last
atrophy.
Atrophy, yeah.
That's shrinkage.
You got to, you PhDs have to dress everything up. I like to say, to be provocative, that the last thing that a man with low testosterone needs is testosterone prescriptions. Not because that may not be the right thing for them, but because they need to get their diet and their lifestyle and all this other stuff straightened out. Have you ever looked into iron overload?
No.
So I end up getting a lot of people to donate blood because we see that their ferritin levels are elevated. And it turns out if you go back to the literature on ferritin, the higher your ferritin level, the higher your risk of death. And as a species that likes to fight and kill each other, humans are optimized to hang on to iron at all costs. We can excrete every other mineral from the periodic table quickly, but iron, we have no means of excretion. You might lose 1.5 to 3 milligrams per day in like your skin and your bodily fluids, and that's it. And if you've got a 17, 20 milligram intake per day, that means you're accumulating iron over time. This was the iron and heart disease hypothesis, Jerome Sullivan. He was a professor at University of South Florida for a long time. He basically noticed that after menopause, women's risk of heart disease approached men's. And he reasoned that it was the cessation of menstruation where women lose 0 to 80 or more milliliters of blood per month that was responsible for this. And so he looked at it and he found a lot of evidence for this. So there's 3 to 5 grams of iron in the average adult human who's not iron deficient, obviously. And iron on a per like gram basis is the single greatest producer of free radicals in the human body. So it's your single greatest source of oxidative stress, right? And that's because the human body, I mean, compare it to copper, right? Copper is also reactive, also produces free radicals, but if there's 3 to 5 grams of iron in the human body, there's 120 milligrams of copper. There's no way for the copper to compete with the iron for oxidative stress production. So what Sullivan said is, look, there's iron sufficiency where you have enough iron to run all of your cytochromes and your mitochondria and produce adequate hemoglobin for your red blood cells and run all your cellular processes. And everything above that is basically just a giant battery that you're waiting to catch fire and burn your house down. And so what he reasoned is if you had men and women go out and donate blood when they were in excess of what he called adequate or iron sufficiency, you would reduce their risk of death. That is in fact borne out by the data that we have on blood donation, which is some of the most strikingly powerful data I've ever seen in terms of the mortality benefits. And this is why I run a ferritin level on everybody. And I'll trend the ferritin level until it's trending down. That's also why I love doing hair tissue mineral analysis in my practice, because we'll see things like, for example, I've seen aluminum levels from 0 to over 119 in the hair. And that's expressed as a milligram percent. And you'll see these people push out these huge quantities of metals and minerals when you get them on the right supplement protocol and you get their diet and their lifestyle dialed in and they feel worlds better. But yeah, I mean, those are the labs, two workhorse labs that I order is those blood labs. And then I do hormones. I do hormones in part because, as I mentioned before, with high sensitivity CRP, if a 35-year-old man comes to me and his testosterone is like 350, but he's working overnight and he's not eating right and he's under a lot of stress, I'm trying to get him to realize, hey, you know, you're tanking your testosterone. You don't need me to write this for you as a prescription. You need to really fix your diet and lifestyle. And then I'll do the rest of the steroid hormones because you'll sometimes find some weird things. Like we had a gentleman who's in the military, has therefore some occupational exposures to some not so nice chemicals. His estrogen levels were actually higher than his testosterone levels.
Mm.
Yeah. You'll see some really deranged hormone panels. And that information can be valuable clinically. Because the thing about hormones is that the people who really do need them, I mean, they really need them. You know, they're telling you about how they are suicidally depressed when they're not on their hormones. And I think that for those people, seeing appropriate psychological or psychiatric or mental health care is important. And I really have a lot of problems with the modern psychiatric paradigm. But leaving that aside, I don't think it's right to leave those people off of hormones. Some of the things that people do to themselves, like I'm really curious about this in the NFL, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I wonder how the repeated head trauma impacts the average testosterone in the NFL. I really do.
I think it plummets it. empirical data, but I know, like I have a traumatic brain injury from football, and it impacted my pituitary gland, and I have a hemorrhage on it, and it manifested itself in testosterone tanking. There's a whole, we don't have to go into all that, but it took years to, it's several years to figure out what was going on, because it did an MRI and that didn't show anything, that it contrasted, and they were like, oh, here it is.
Wow.
It's right here. And then it took several more years to find the right protocol for me just to get me normal. I'm 43 and I'm in the best shape of my life now. Not because I'm on super physiological testosterone or I have anything like that. It's I'm just operating at normal now. And all the hard work I've been putting in for years on all the other stuff finally like started paying off the past couple of years. So that's a whole nother discussion. If people are listening to this and they're like, man, I like Dr. Stillman. I like what he's, how could they not like you, by the way? Where can they find you? How can they follow you? How can they get connected to your services?
So if you want to become a patient in my practice, it's stillmanmd.com and click on apply for consultation. And I have a Substack where it's my own personal blog. You get emails that are written by me, not an AI bot or a ghostwriter. And that's stillmanmd.substack.com. And then we have a newsletter that goes out because I have another company called Stillman Wellness. And Stillman Wellness is where Jim Laird and I, who you've interviewed, and people should go listen to his interview. It was great. Where Jim Laird and I coach people. And my friend Clark Engelbert actually runs some programs with me there too. So it's a group of us. And we coach people in how to be healthy. And we have a variety of different programs. People should sign up. We do a free webinar every week we get a lot of positive feedback from. And it's all just for the list. So you got to be on the email list in order to get access.
I love it. Well, Dr. Stillman, thank you for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. I've learned a lot, and I'm excited to have you back again because there's questions I didn't even get to. So I'm looking forward to it. Thanks again for listening to the Blueprint Podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, do me a favor, take a picture of the cover art and post it on Instagram and at me and Dr. Stillman with any questions you have. He's really good about answering questions. I know he'd love to hear from you. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you on the next episode.